Wahoo, wahoo, wahoo. Hello and welcome to Happy Horror Time. My name's Tim Murdoch.
And my name's Matt Emmert, and that was a little jig courtesy of Tim Murdoch.
I guess it's because I'm Irish.
Tim, have you copywritten that, gotten that sound copyright?
Yes, I did, and I spent, let me check here, $14,000.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that is a new, true, happy horror time. Horror time. Wow, I have an accent now. Oh my God, what is going on? We are Tim and Matt, and we're
Happy Horror Time Podcast.
We're gonna
it's like, don't pop quiz me.
We're going to introduce us because this is a very special episode. Why, Tim? Ask me why.
Okay, because this one we're talking about
alcohol. No, I said ask me why.
Oh, okay. Matt, why is this a special episode?
You know what, Tim? That's a great question. And you know why? Because this is a bonus episode that's usually just for patrons. But because we are making some changes to our Patreon and our bonus structure, we are offering this to everyone as a taste of what you can get.
Like a sip of coffee.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, when you go to a coffee shop and they have like the little nibbles like on the counter that you
I absolutely hate the word nibbles. Go ahead.
Oh my God, I love nibbling. Do you like the word moist?
Ew, I hate nibbles. Okay. I hate moist. Gross.
Do you like the word? Wait, I'm trying
and
to think
about
it.
I hate when people say shoot the shit.
Oh my God. Okay, so we're going to shoot the shit about some nibbles. Sometimes they're moist. We are giving you a taste of what a bonus episode with Matt and Tim is like. You know why, Tim?
Why?
Because what we do on a weekly basis, you know, we review new movies, new horror movies, we interview people, but what we do for
special
our bonus,
guests.
Yes, all sorts of special guests, and we do something a little different for our bonus episodes. Our bonus episodes, like, we always pick either like a, I don't know what, Tim, like
an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah, or like a theme, or like we go back and talk about like an original and a remake, or like a popular franchise. We do all sorts of stuff, and that's what
favorite.
We do. Exactly. So we always have a theme, and we do one a month. But because this is for everyone, we are going to announce some changes to our Patreon bonus structure. You ready, Tim?
Yeah, explain it to me because I am a moron.
You are not a moron.
Well, I mean, I'm just
saying. You're a Mormon.
First off, the word Patreon, I don't even know how to spell it. Okay.
So it's just patron with an E. So if Patreon is Patreon. So if you go to patreon.com/happyhorrortime, that's us. Great segue, Tim.
Trust me, you know I don't know how to memorize anything, but I'm really happy you and your boyfriend understand this.
Well, what happens is Patreon, it just means these are people that, so Patreon is just where you can basically sign up to support and donate on a monthly basis to the podcast. And most podcasters give perks for these donations because this helps us do what we do. This is how we monetize the podcast, and it helps us continue to just do this and what we love. But we used to just have one tier. It was $5 a month, and you got access to bonus episodes. So we are doing something new. You ready, Tim? Give me a drum roll.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
Dun. One more time.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
Dun. Okay, so sorry, that was good. That was good. Okay, so we are going to have two tiers. Listen up. So the first one is for $2 a month. And what we are going to give for people who donate $2 a month, we're starting a monthly newsletter that is going to be produced by our producer, Jacob. And it's just going to be talking about what's coming up for the podcast. We'll give you some like hints and not hints. We're going to tell you
who you're. You know the way I look at it as, I'll tell you how I look at this. It's like, hey, a lot of my friends don't even like horror movies. Like my friend Orlando, he will not watch a horror movie. But like, he's like, I want to support your podcast, but I don't.
Well, this is how.
Right.
And so back to, so for the $2 a month tier, you'll get our monthly newsletter where we're going to talk about what's coming up for the podcast, the movies we're going to be reviewing, the interviews we've done. We don't usually give sneak peeks of like who we're interviewing or who we've already interviewed. So we're going to talk about that, like upcoming guests and just all sorts of things going on in our lives.
I'm going to tell people how your breath smells.
Exactly. Great every day.
Just kidding.
I'm going to tell everyone how your hair looks.
fantastic.
Exactly. Now, I was going to say fabulous, but
fabulous.
So yes, you'll get just, you know, sneak peeks at the stuff we're going to be covering in the podcast and maybe just fun stuff about us. But that's going to be our monthly newsletter.
Like my favorite color.
Yeah. Like, oh my God, what's your favorite color?
Blue.
Oh God, there it goes. Why do you have to donate? So another thing is we're going to start to have polls where you can vote in about like the favorite reviewed movie of the month, because we review a bunch of movies and we're going to do polls and see what people like the most. And you also are going to receive, if you're one of these $2 a month patrons, we have two types of stickers with our logo on it that we're going to autograph for you and send you.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, I don't sell it on eBay though for $20,000.
I know. If just one alone with a Matt Emmert and a Tim Murdoch signature on it, Tim. $20,000?
Yeah, well, I mean, my signature will probably be worth
$19,900, and mine is
$100. Yes, 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 yes.
Exactly. So again, that's our $2 a month. Now, our $5 a month patrons, which is the tier we've had up until now, you are going to not only get everything I just described in the first tier, which is the monthly newsletter, you can participate in polls, and you get the autograph stickers, but you'll get our monthly bonus episodes like this one. This is your taste, but after this one, it's for our patrons, for the $5 a month patrons. You get our bonus episodes. You'll also get our regular episodes ad-free, because we now have ads on our episodes, if you've noticed, and you'll get them ad-free through Patreon. And another thing is we're going to do polls for our $5 patrons to help us choose the theme of the bonus episode we're going to do. So we may be like, hey, vote between these three themes, either, you know, Tim's butt, Tim's nose, or Tim's eyes.
Right. And everyone should pick my eyes because they're beautiful.
No, but we may say like, hey, we're deciding between, you know, like werewolf movies or like
spiders
or, you know, demented ventriloquist doctors. Ventriloquist, because there's tons.
Yes.
And so you'll get to help pick the theme of the bonus episode coming up. So these are just new things. It's going to be a lot of fun for our patrons, for our existing patrons. Thank you for the support. Now you're going to get even more benefits. And for new patrons, you know, we would love your support.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Because I'm so glad, Matt, that was a mouthful.
I know. And I'm sorry if that like bored you, but like,
They probably just zip through it.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I'm sure anyone who either does a podcast or does anything on their own, like, you know, we're trying to kind of turn this into a business. And
it's like doing a high school play each week. That's the way I look at it. Like,
without
the
ridicule.
Right. Well, but you remember when you used to get like a high school program when you saw a play and like it said like, these are your patrons.
Oh, yes. People you supported.
Right. Like,
yeah, but you got nothing other than your name in a program for that. We're like giving you shit.
Right.
You
I want
like
stickers.
Get shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I always like to see my name in a program.
Exactly. And so like, so again, this is just a sample of what we do in our patron episodes. So if you want to sign up to continue getting our patron episodes, you go to patreon.com. Spell it, Tim.
You go ahead.
patreon.com/happyhorrortime. And that's the last I will do for plugging, because we will get into the stuff.
Right. And you know what? Thanks everyone for keeping this party going, because Matt and I watch movies and we talk about movies. So you can join us.
Yes, exactly. And you know what? This episode, this is really special to us. And this is what we mean by when we pick a theme. We decided to pick Wes Craven's Nightmares as the theme. We are talking about the original Nightmare on Elm Street and Wes Craven's New Nightmare, the only two movies in the series that he wrote and directed.
R.I.P. Wes Craven.
I know. And just a genius, a horror master. And I know people may be like, wait, what about part three? Yes, he wrote like part of the screenplay for it, but he did not direct it.
He's a dream warrior.
He is not a dream warrior. He's like a sort of dream warrior. So we're going to get started by talking about the one,
the only,
the original
Nightmare
on
Elm
Street. They're like, oh my God, we're annoyed by you guys so much.
It came out in 1984. Where were you the first time you saw Nightmare on Elm Street? What is your history?
4 years old. No, I am the first time I saw, and the truth is, I kind of feel like we should talk about this movie almost like it was the first time, because both Tim and I have seen this a million times.
And you know, I probably have seen, no joke, I probably have seen this movie on the big screen like 5 times in the theater.
I think so. The first time I saw it was a sleepover when I would always have friends over, like 8th grade, like 7th, 8th, 9th grade.
So you were popular.
Oh, so popular. No, but we would always watch horror movies. And I remember the first time watching Nightmare on Elm Street. And I'll never forget the very ending scene when it's like the dream and her mom gets pulled.
I can't believe you just gave it away.
I gave it away, but the mom gets pulled through the door. we were laughing so hard because if you pause it just right, you can see us. No, no. When if you pause it just right, you see it's like a doll. That's
well,
being...
it's of course.
I mean, I know it's 1984, but for some reason that memory sticks out to me. The movie and just the doll being pulled through the door.
My first introduction to A Nightmare on Elm Street, I was looking for my brother, Jamie, and I knocked on my friend Mary's house. Mary, and everyone was watching a movie in the dark basement during the summertime, like on a VHS rental.
That sounds like a horror movie right there.
Well, I know. So I remember walking down the stairs and hearing the nightmare. I was hearing the Nightmare on Elm Street. No, I'm like it was the scene. It was the beginning. Yeah. It was when Amanda Weiss, still don't know. she was like walking around and like you saw like a goat run by.
Yes.
So I was like, what is this? And we all sat down and watched it. And I just remember just being in that basement. It was so scary. Like, I knew I was watching something so forbidden. Like, I was a rated R movie. I think I was 9.
That's a better story than mine.
I know. Yours
it.
Are pretty terrible.
Well, you know what? I'm just telling the truth. Like, I know, but I don't have a crazy story from it.
No, I mean, this story is not crazy either. But, I mean, it's just, it had such an effect on me because I knew I was watching something I shouldn't.
I will say this. Of all the horror movie franchises, even though I have made it known a million times that Halloween is my favorite horror franchise, Nightmare on Elm Street as a young kid scared me the most because I always felt like, you know, you have so little control over your dreams and what happens in them. So like a killer in my dreams, I was terrified of because I didn't know what I could do to like fend them off. Whereas a killer in real life, terrifying, but I was like, okay, I would do this and I would do that. And so it really did, the idea scared me.
Right. And like, I couldn't differentiate like, because you know, today's movies star like Selena Gomez as a teenager, or who's the other one? The girl from Pretty Little Liars. What's her name?
And Scream 4, Lucy.
Lucy.
Hale.
Yeah. Like, you know, like those girls are glossy. They're done up. Their hair is perfect. Their faces are perfect. Like Heather Langenkamp and Amanda Weiss, they look like everyday girls. Like, you know,
no,
what I mean?
I know. And I like, wish more people in horror movies looked
right,
like everyday
and
people.
And not only that, the neighborhood looked like, except for you do see palm trees in A Nightmare on Elm Street.
It looked like Illinois.
It was supposed to, it's a Springwood, Ohio.
Oh, Ohio. Sorry. Illinois is Haddonfield, Illinois.
Springwood, Ohio.
I'm still stuck on Halloween.
Well, I mean, if you watch A Nightmare on Elm Street, there's palm trees everywhere.
You know, so let's set up the plot as if you haven't seen it. And again, horror movie lovers.
Who hasn't seen this?
Definitely has, but we're going to set it up like it was the first. And one thing I do want to say, and Tim and I don't do research for this, but we have seen enough documentaries on this that we know that I actually think Wes Craven has done interviews where he's talked about how the idea came from. Apparently there were like refugees of war that came over from Vietnam that had like these disturbing like post-traumatic stress nightmares. And they thought, they were like afraid to go to sleep because they thought they were going to die in their sleep. And some of them actually did die in their sleep. They even called the phenomenon Asian death syndrome. Like that is crazy. And he heard this and saw newspaper articles of this and was like, hey, what if there was like a killer in your dreams where if you died in your dream, you died in real life? And I think that's really a cool story.
No, it is scary. And you know, I do remember the first time I saw the actual Freddy. I mean, because Heather Langenkamp famously says that Robert Englund's only in the film for 6 minutes. So
it's
like the whole aspect of Freddy did not scare me.
So see, I had a different reaction. So the opening scene of this movie, it's someone. So what I love about the original is that whereas if you've seen this franchise, Freddy Krueger becomes more of a comic character toward the
like
sequels.
Like Jay Leno.
Exactly. Same chin. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, doing one-liners and stuff. They kept Freddy Krueger very dark, shadowy. Only
almost
has a few
two
lines.
In the shadows for
almost
me.
Almost two in the shadows, but it made the mystery of this freaky, burnt, like, killer in your dreams. And the opening scene with Amanda Wiss, Tim's favorite. Amanda,
I can't say it. Wiss-wise.
Where she's in a nightmare, and he's just created this glove that has knives for fingers, which is terrifying. And he's like, you know, basically he is, like, chasing her, and there's, like, a scuffle. I love that word, by the way. And when she wakes up from it, he had clawed at her nightgown, and she wakes up and notices that there's claws in the nightgown.
Her mom has this famous line. She goes, you better cut those nails or...
Or you better quit that kind of dreaming. Because, yeah, mom, hold on, let me just change my dreams.
First
got
off,
it.
The mom, you have to... Her hair is so out of place, and her makeup's all smeared because she has a lover over.
And it looks like the lover doesn't give two shits about Tina, Amanda Wiss. It's just like,
or
come back
mother,
to bed.
For that
yeah,
matter.
Probably not. But it's like, so at the beginning of this movie, you think, is Tina the main character? Because she is the one in the opening scene, and she survives, so it's not like an opening scene death, but... And then they go to high school, and that's when they introduce Heather Langenkamp as famous final girl Nancy,
Johnny Depp. You owe me a Coke.
And Johnny Depp plays Glenn, who's Nancy's... Oh my God, Nancy's boyfriend. And then there's Tina's boyfriend, who is not a high school student, but like...
He's a high school. He goes there.
Oh, I thought he just kind of shows up from time to time.
Why would he just walk them into
school?
Oh,
I thought he was older and just like came over.
You know what? I've never looked at it that way. I just assume he was a high school student.
Maybe you could be right. I guess I always saw because he never like entered the school. I thought he just kind of like came over.
You know, I met him.
You did?
Mm-hmm. It was
and he's
really
the
quick.
One who his original name is Nick Corey is no longer his name.
Yeah, he goes by Jesu?
You mean like Sue?
I'm pronouncing it wrong.
But
my
I know
quick
it's...
interaction with him, side note, is I was working security on the show Joey, and he walked up and I was like, hey, you're from A Nightmare on Elm Street. And he goes, I was in other things.
Hey, I was like that's listen. Such a dumb response because it's like, of course you were in other things.
Like, okay,
be
well,
happy
I...
we're recognizing you for something and something that is a classic, incredible yes. movie. Like, who is angry about that? That's
well,
so
bizarre. I think he's embraced it now, but back in 2004, he wanted to not be known for that.
Well, apparently he didn't embrace his name either because he's no longer known
oh,
as
he's
Nick,
Nick
Corey.
Corey. Yeah, I think he said in a documentary I saw that was strictly an agent recommendation.
It does suck when they like Americanized
it's,
names, but it was the
terrible.
80s and ages.
Even though
terrible.
I want one. So if you're listening, Tim Murdock's available.
Tim Murdock. He'll change his name to anything.
I'll change it to Nick Corey, whatever.
Yeah, he will be Nick Corey. Anyway, so there's the four of them. There's Rod, who's Tina's boyfriend, Tina, Nancy, and Glenn, who it was Johnny Depp's first movie. And again, everyone talks about this movie because Johnny Depp
and
was in it.
You know how he got the part, right? Wes Craven's daughter was like, he's a cutie. And his dad's like, okay.
Here's the thing. Like, I'm not the biggest Johnny Depp fan. Oh, my God.
I like Johnny
crazy.
Depp in this movie, but not pirate
I don't
Johnny
know.
Depp.
He's always so creepy and weird and extra in everything. But this
I
movie is just a normal.
I love that you just called him extra.
I'm embracing the words of our young Gen Z folk.
Hey,
I'm
you
trying.
Know, I wish you'd be stop being so basic, you extra bitch.
wait, you can't be basic and extra unless
yes,
you are.
Yes, you can.
If you're basic, though, I guess if being extra is basic, I can't believe we're talking about this.
I
if being
know.
Extra is basic, then I guess you could be basic extra.
You know what?
What if you were Basic Instinct?
Oh, then I'm Sharon Stone and I'm Uncut Gems.
Oh, my God. Okay, so we get to then it goes right to Tina has Nancy over for like a sleepover because her mom's out of town. Glenn
and she's
comes
scared
because
she's having messed up dreams.
But they realize that, and this is the first freaky coincidence, that like when Tina's telling Nancy about her nightmare, they realize they're dreaming or having a nightmare about the same man, someone with knives for fingers and a burnt face. And you even see a look from Johnny Depp that like a recognition.
Yeah, it
look.
Wasn't a huge response, but we as the viewer are like, okay, all three of them.
Back in the 80s, when apparently men couldn't ever admit emotion or being afraid, the guys in this movie like never want to admit that they're scared or that they're having nightmares. So it's only the two girls that are talking about, wow, we're having a nightmare about the same person. I'm telling you, Tim, if we both had a nightmare about the same person,
I'd be telling the world.
Well, I would be freaked the fuck out, yeah. And I would think something's majorly wrong. So, you know, Rod shows up, and that
he's like,
night,
we'll take the room, and you can have the rest.
And she's like, stay here, guys. Like, and they end up having sex, and, you know, very moral, virginal Nancy is like to Glenn,
she's
her boyfriend.
She's in Tina's bedroom, and poor Johnny Depp is sleeping in the living room, and he goes, morality sucks.
Yeah, because he hears Tina and Rod having sex, and it's
and
like...
And it's so crazy.
It's like the most over... It's like, oh, ah! Like it was
what
like,
was that? What was that?
Oh,
Matt?
It's like, oh,
one more time.
Okay, it's like, oh, but it's like the most obviously, like 3 weeks after filming ended, they're like, hey, Amanda Wiss and Nick Corey,
what's
can you come
called?
In here and
what,
do
there's, it's called looping.
Yeah, they just like did the most over the extra, Tim.
It was so
sex
extra,
noises.
But extra. Well,
So she goes, so Tina goes back to bed. She has another nightmare with Freddy, and it's just really well done. The lighting, everything is really scary. He creeps her out by like his arms extend really
long.
Yeah,
she starts running and then he cuts off his finger, goes ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, and he's so weird. But then they have this struggle, like, right outside the house. And then, and this is what is so cool about this scene, it switches to
the bedroom.
You seeing what's happening in real life. And Nick Corey has woken up and he sees Tina struggling and he thinks there's someone under the blankets. But when he pulls the blanket off, there's no one there because it's happening in her dream. But then you see her literally get clawed apart by no one because you're seeing what he's seeing in real life and it's happening in the dream.
And the blood, and then she gets thrown up against the wall and then she slides up to the ceiling. I'm pointing to the ceiling like people, I know, can, people see can see us.
But no, but it is, by the way, this is one of, I think this is one of the most memorable death scenes of all time.
What a good scene to start off like, okay, like if they're going to show us this, what are they going to show us next?
She is slithering around the ceiling because remember, he's seeing her, but this is happening in the dream. So gravity apparently doesn't exist in a dream, but and he doesn't see anyone, but he sees her being slashed open, and it is fucking gory.
And then, like, she's swinging around, and, like, I think her face, like, knocks him over, out.
Yeah. And then she just falls dead, and, like,
a
Nancy...
big, like, it's like a splash.
Yeah, Nancy and Glenn come in, and, like, they see the windows open, and
there's
Rod is so confused, and he's like, who did this? Like, where did you go? But Nancy and Glenn are looking at Rod like, you were the only person in here, and obviously they don't know what's going on dream-wise.
They don't get to look
yet.
At him. He's already out the window.
Rod. They look at Rod. Rod didn't leave the window. He didn't leave, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, he did? Oh,
yeah,
oh,
remember,
sorry.
They get inside and he's not there.
Oh, you're right. So they immediately think that Rod must have done this.
Like, because he's not at the scene of the murder.
Exactly. And also they don't know that as someone in dreams is killing. Right. So anyway, like, as we switch to, of course, like, the police think that Rod did this. And you do get big supporting characters in this are Nancy's parents, played by Ronnie Blakely.
That's right.
And John Saxon.
John Saxon, who you might remember from Black Christmas.
Yes, John Saxon, who's always a cop.
Always a cop. But he's a cop. He's a sexy cop.
Ronnie Blakely in this has the most amazing facial
expressions.
Because
she's drunk throughout the whole thing, and her acting style's like... So
less
proper
is more.
Acting. Yeah, it's like so proper acting and she's drunk.
But it's like so proper acting, but like really long glances, really intense facial expressions, really dramatic.
Yeah, every line is like oozing and dripping with like, tell me, doctor.
What is going on? Tell me about those nightmares.
But you know, after I didn't appreciate her performance until I was an adult.
I think it's both effective and hilarious at the same time. Can that be true?
Yes. Okay. Because you know, you're basic.
I'm so extra and basic. I'm a basic extra. No, but she, and like, so she's an alcoholic. She's estranged from John Saxon. But he's the sheriff or the cop or sheriff
of
the town.
I think he's the sheriff of the town. And then, so what's his name? Rod gets put into jail. And so he's now in jail. And Nancy is like, dad, like if he falls asleep, he'll die. So
yeah, like don't do it. And you do see a scene where it now shifts. The story shifts to Nancy. She has a nightmare at school, which is great because Tina's in her nightmare in a body bag.
Yeah. And she's like, Nancy. And like some centipede falls out of her mouth.
And what I love about this nightmare is so Nancy has a run in with Freddy Krueger and to wake herself up.
Hey,
in a dream.
Where's your pass?
Screw your pass. By the way, Tim and I are available to do reenactments.
Yes, we
that's
can do
our,
all the time.
That's our additional tier.
Right.
Can you imagine if we did like cameos?
Oh my gosh. I would donate it all to a charity because I would not be able to just take that money.
Hi, we would like Tim and Matt to reenact all of Nightmare on Elm Street. That'll be $200,000.
Well, no, I would give it all to a charity.
Would you do? Oh, well, you're so nice.
I am.
You know what I would give it all to? Ronnie Blakely.
That's nice.
Well, so she has this nightmare. She wakes herself up by like putting her arm on a hot pipe and she wakes up screaming in class, which is hilarious, but she has a burn on her arm. So she realizes, oh shit, what's happening in the dream happens in real life.
So Robert Shea, who's like the president of New Line Cinema.
Oh my God. He's the president of Nightmare on Elm Street.
But you know, they do call New Line Cinema the house that Freddie built.
Oh, that's true.
Fun fact.
That's true.
So Lynn Shay, I don't know how she got the role.
She's the sister of Robert Shay, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, she's a great actress.
She plays the teacher in class. It's a very small role, but like she's there like when Nancy freaks out
so
in class.
She goes home, and now Nancy's journey for the rest of the film is to like save her friends, save herself.
Exactly. Nancy is wised up to what's going on, but what happens is, and we always kind of skip through the middle, which is totally fine. Rod gets killed because he has a nightmare in his jail cell, and Freddie hangs him, and they think he hung himself.
Right. So this way it looks like Nancy's even more crazy. They're like, okay, Nancy, he just hung himself.
And the funny thing is Nancy keeps trying to explain to Glenn, Johnny Depp, like what's going on. And
he's like, very passive.
He's the most, I find him, and this has nothing to do with my thoughts on Johnny Depp, just the character of Glenn, so unlikable. Every time she asks him to, she wants
stay
him
awake.
To watch her stay awake, and if she's struggling in a dream to wake her up, he falls asleep, doesn't
right.
do
and
that.
And the famous line, whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
There's another thing, it leads to, I mean, we can just really get to his big death scene, which is another classic
death
scene.
Well, first off, we need to share with the world that he was wearing a tank top, a crop top.
Oh, yes, there's a famous scene where he's wearing a crop top and she's across the street and says, whatever you do, don't fall asleep. And then what does he do? He falls asleep. And there's a famous death scene where he gets pulled through his bed and just blood spurts out everywhere.
And she tried so hard to keep him awake and like she called and the parents are such assholes.
But what I hate about it is that not only is he not the most supportive person, he like sort of believes her but doesn't take it seriously. He's just so dumb. I really don't like his character. Like Nancy is a fighter. She's trying to figure out how can I figure this out.
It really is Nancy's movie. It is. It's Heather Langenkamp's movie. Did I say that right?
Yeah, and I actually think the biggest supporting character are her parents and Amanda Wiss. Like, I truly believe her parents. Glenn is so forgettable in this movie because he's so ineffective.
Well, I didn't forget him.
You didn't forget him because he thought he was a cutie.
I did. He's a preppy. And I like that they put him in, like, sweater vests. He looks cute
throughout.
You're
like, I loved his fashion sense.
I liked his fashion.
Worst boyfriend ever. But
worst boyfriend. Listen, that's all I'm looking for. I'm looking for some arm candy.
Yeah, but if he's so dumb that he's going to get killed, you're not going to have that arm
candy.
You know
what? At least I had him for a little bit.
So we did forget, like, there are some different things that happen where basically Nancy is trying to uncover what is going on, who is this person. She recognized that her parents know who she's talking about when she describes someone named Fred Krueger. And finally, her mom, like, takes her down to the
basement.
Which is
a great monologue.
She has this big scene where she says that Freddy Krueger was a child killer, which is, you know, I mean, killers are horrible in any capacity, but a child murder is like the worst of the
worst.
And the
crazy thing about A Nightmare on Elm Street is that he did, like, he's a child killer that became, like, so popular in the 80s. You know what I'm saying? Like, so
everyone loves Freddy Krueger. Mm-hmm. Well, so then apparently something happened in the case and he was set free, even though everyone knew that he killed all these kids. So a bunch of the parents on Elm Street got together, like,
torched him.
And, you know, basically got him to get into his house and they torched the house and burned him alive. So when she tells him that and she's trying to explain to Nancy, like, oh, so he's dead, he can't get you. And that's when she finally puts it together. Oh my God, he's coming after all the kids in their dreams.
So Nancy has the ability to pull things out of her dream because then she went to a dream clinic with her mother and she pulls out Freddy's hat. So she's like, oh my God, I've got the best idea. I'm going to pull Freddy out of my dream and have my dad, who's across the street cleaning up my dead boyfriend's guts, to come back over and
And it is a good idea because when you think about it, you can't control what you do in dreams, but if you can get the person out of the dream, you can kill them.
Right.
She also,
so
I
she
love
puts
in
together
this
in 20 minutes.
Amazing sequence, which lasts 20 minutes, booby traps her entire house. And the reason we know it lasts 20 minutes is because she, like, sets an alarm. And
on her watch,
I don't
talks.
Think the booby trap experts could have set up those booby traps
that
quickly.
No, she did a wonderful job.
She is incredible. She learned
from
a book.
She's like MacGyver on no sleep.
She is like MacGyver on no sleep. She hasn't slept for days. She sets up all these booby traps, and she goes into her dream, and she sets her alarm so that it gives a countdown, and when she knows there's only 10 seconds left, she, like, runs, jumps on Freddy so that when she wakes up, she'll be holding him, right? So they do have a really scary sequence. When she first wakes up from the dream, he's not there, and she's like, oh my God, I must be crazy. But then what happens?
You tell me.
Oh, he jumps up and goes, rawr!
Oh, that's
and
right.
It's a
okay,
big
yeah.
pop-up
so then,
scare.
Like, the frustrating part about this scene, and because I remember finally watching it with my mom and not in someone's basement. Remember my mom said, she goes, why aren't the cop, John Saxon, helping her across the street? Because she's literally breaking windows like, I've got him. Get my dad, you asshole.
She keeps yelling. The cops are across the street. Like we said, Glenn is dead. And she's yelling, please help. Get my dad. Get my dad. It takes them forever. And you want to punch all of them because they don't believe
her. Like, they have a teenager dead across the street, but they're not believing this teenager?
And they're not believing. And they've seen the teenager is not just dead, like ripped apart. So they know this is something that isn't just a normal,
so they
conventional
finally
killer.
Come over.
Finally, but this is the crazy part. Like, she's able to light him on fire.
Right. And then Freddy's upstairs attacking the mother. Mm-hmm. So her and her dad go into the bedroom and, like, they throw a sheet over Freddy and the mom.
Because they're both on fire. And then in the weirdest, almost like Haunted Mansion Disney sequence, the bed, like, they
turns
both
blue and purple.
They both are lowered into the bed and then turns into nothing and they're gone. Like, the mom and Freddy. And
the dad just kind of goes like, hey, I'm going to Why is the dad leave her?
He just doesn't even acknowledge what he just saw. She's like, now do you believe me? And he just doesn't go. But also, as viewers, I remember thinking, wait, did he kill the mom? Did he take her into the dream world? Where
did
they go?
Stuck in a bed.
Why did the lights look like Haunted Mansion? Like, it's so weird.
I guess it's all, I mean, it's all a dream, I guess.
It is. Well, but no, but they're in real life now. That's why it's so confusing. But then what happens is there's a good empowerment monologue where she senses he's actually still there. So she turns around and she says, you know what? I know your secret now. All I have to do is, like, take away your power. I don't believe in you. You're nothing. You're shit.
She says you're shit.
Yeah, and then she turns her back to him, walks away, and he tries to stab her, and he just disappears.
Right.
But then we get into the ending sequence.
This is the best.
The most unforgettable one, the one I used to pause as a kid. She goes out her door, and it looks like she's now like nothing happened. Like her mom's there.
She doesn't feel like $1 million.
Yes. And she said, Nancy says she slept. All her friends come to pick her up in their car. So you're like, wait, did she reset everything? What just happened?
So the car starts like the, what's it called?
The convertible top.
Yeah. It has,
like, comes over.
It's like in the colors of Freddie's sweater.
So she realizes, oh shit. No, this isn't right. I think I'm in another dream. She can't get out of the car. She waves to her mom, and her mom's waving.
And then, like, Freddie's hand pops through this little, like, circle, like,
window,
what is this, square?
Little,
like,
tiny window in the front
and
of the
car. Pulls her through, which is totally plausible.
Now, the reason I used to pause this is because this little window on the front door, no human being could ever fit through it.
It's so ridiculous.
And it's the 80s, so of course, you know, CGI wasn't in effect, so you can see them pull a doll through, and then it just ends on that. And I remember...
But then the little girls are jump-roping.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Here's the thing. They leave the ending up to interpretation, and through the years, I've thought about it a lot. I'm interested what you think.
I just think about it. It's
just very, like, it's confusing, because first you think she defeats him in the real world because he disappears, but then there's that ending dream, and my takeaway is that she did defeat him, but everything that happened did happen. Her friends are dead, her mom's dead, and that little, like, extra dream at the end is a reminder that he's still around.
Right, which I think that's actually perfect.
I'll go with that.
No, I mean, yeah, that is. Because I remember just thinking, like, oh, it's a horror movie, and this is, the horror's
not. They just
need
a last scare.
Yeah, like, they're just one kind of punch.
But the thing is that what I will say about that is that, again, it is, dreams can be crazy. It's a little confusing. And as a kid, for a while, I was confused, because I was like, wait, are her friends alive? Did her mom get killed? Is Freddie still alive? But they wanted to do that, I think, just to give you that unsettling feeling of things are not all okay,
right.
You know?
And you know, the cool thing about it is this movie cost $1.1 million and it made $57
million
in 1984.
Here's the thing. It was groundbreaking. I know Wes Craven had done horror movies in the past before this. He had worked on a lot. But this was, I think, his first huge hit. I mean, this is 12 years before Scream. You know, like, a lot of people think Wes Craven's Scream, but they don't know, like, I guess
they probably think of him in Deadly Friend. That was his follow-up film.
Oh, God.
After.
Yes, which we covered Deadly Friend in our last, our Friendly February.
If you
listen
to
one.
Me, I go gaga for it.
Tim's loves it. But what happened was, like, this was just had such an impact, and it led to so many sequels. And the thing is that the original Nightmare on Elm Street is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Same here. I love it.
It is just so well done. And remember, if you have to look at it as what it was before all the sequels. Nowadays, you can go back knowing Freddy, like, became action figures and had one-liners and not take it as seriously. But if you were seeing it in 1984, it was groundbreaking.
Yeah, and it's serious. Well, except for that ending's a little...
A little bonkers, but remember, yes, Halloween had come out, and Friday the 13th had come out, a ton of slashers, but this is the first, I feel like, slasher in dreams.
Right, well, of course, and Jason and Michael Myers did not talk, so Freddy's the one that talks.
Exactly.
So people like that.
Yeah, and he talks, but at that point, he was more serious, and he also, listen, Michael Myers' mask is terrifying, and Jason in the first one.
Gorgeous.
Well, Jason's gorgeous, but, you know, they're both really, really scary. But that burnt, shadowy look for Freddy, before he started cracking jokes, was really terrifying.
I agree. For some reason, I don't know, scary. Freddy never scared me.
You know what's funny? A lot I just of my enjoyed friends, it. I remember hearing from like friends' parents, like, oh, we don't want them to watch because we'll have nightmares. I was lucky enough that I don't have nightmares based off of what I've seen. Like, I'm not the person like, oh my God, I watched that movie, now I'm gonna have a nightmare. Like, it doesn't work like that. If anything, a lot of times what I'm thinking about or watching, I don't dream about. So right. Fill me with horror movies. Right, I won't have nightmares.
Me neither. The only movie that I've ever had nightmares at was Psycho 2. Don't ask me why. I don't know.
Because it was so bad?
No, there's one. I know where I'm gonna go.
It's actually not that bad.
No, it's not. Psycho 2, really, really quick. There's one scene in Psycho 2 where Meg Tilly or Jennifer Tilly, I can't even remember, looks over at this coal.
Not Jennifer Tilly, Meg
not
Tilly.
Meg Tilly. And she looks over at this coal and like her mom's face is like in the coal. And I don't know why, for some reason, that's like scarred into my brain.
Vera Miles, right, from
yes,
the original.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? It's just a real
course.
Quick
yeah, yeah.
Clip. But as a kid, I was like, whoa!
I think anything with your mom being dead in front of you can be very, you know, right. traumatic
anyway,
for a kid.
Anyway, Wes Craven's New Nightmare!
Well, so the reason we want it, we usually do two movies, and we, yes, there's a lot of sequels, and some of them are really good, some of them aren't so good, but we wanted this theme to be the ones that Wes Craven directed, because moving forward 10 years, Wes Craven only participated in the third Nightmare on Elm Street. He wrote like a first draft of the script and they used some of it, but they kind of, you know, did their own thing with it. And then all the sequels, they got kind of comical. And then they had Freddy's Dead and they essentially killed Freddy for then.
And people loved the first one so much that I think, you know, Wes Craven wanted to get back to his roots.
And also what I did read about this only because I love the series so much.
Me
is
too.
That
I love it.
The idea for Wes. So 10 years later, it's the 10th anniversary of Nightmare on Elm Street. They've already done Freddy's Dead. They had Wes Craven came back to do Wes Craven's New Nightmare. And the idea for it was actually what his earliest idea was for part three. He wanted it to be Freddy in the real world haunting the actors making a movie. At that time, they're like, no, that's not going to work. But
it's
they
so meta.
Yeah, they brought it back for 1994. So,
which I think it was ahead of its time.
It
even
was totally.
Still.
I mean,
like,
we talked about.
This is before the internet. This is before. I'm
Scream,
sure there
was. This was 1994, everything. 2 years before Scream, where was meta commentary on it. So the opening, first off, what I remember when New Nightmare was coming off, I was like, oh my God, a New Nightmare on Elm Street directed
by Wes Craven.
The
trailer is so good. If you've never seen the trailer, Google it.
It's directed by Wes Craven, and they brought Heather Langenkamp back. Now, just so you know, the character of Nancy does come back in part three, and she's great, and at the very end, she gets killed, and you're so upset. So seeing that Heather Langenkamp was coming back to star in Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
Heather Langenkamp.
Playing herself. First, I was confused because I didn't
It's kind of confusing, but once the movie starts, you're like, okay, I'm in for it.
Yeah, so Wes Craven's New Nightmare, the whole thing, the opening, it's really genius because they do a very similar opening scene to the original. It's someone making a claw with knives on it, but then you see it's Heather working on a Nightmare on Elm Street
She's
movie.
She's now married with and her child on set.
She has a child on set. She looks great. She looks
does.
Phenomenal.
She looks. Her hair is so beautiful.
She just looks great. And her husband is like doing props.
David Newsome.
And his team is working on a glove for a new Nightmare movie.
And
so
then
right
the glove
away, very meta. Yeah.
Starts moving.
Well, the glove starts moving on its own and attacks and kills two of the crew members. And then you see Heather Langenkamp wakes up from a nightmare and there's a big earthquake.
Right. And it's in her beautiful home and she's now like an actress and her husband's
he's a prop guy. Yeah.
Thank you. I was
but
like, what is
what
he?
Is crazy? And she has a young son. But what the crazy
Miko
part
Hughes.
Is yes, but played by Miko Hughes and his name's Dylan, right?
Yeah. Yes, she must. I'm no joke. She probably says it 5,000 times.
But right away in the movie, you're like, if in case just you go into this not knowing anything, you're like, wait, so she's not playing Nancy. She's playing herself. And she just had a dream about making a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. So again,
and
it's
so
very
cool because
meta.
She's wearing the same pajamas that she wore in A Nightmare on Elm
exactly.
Street in 1984. Yeah,
exactly.
But now it's 1994.
I know. And so you're like, what? What? This is too much. But anyway, so you know, she's living in LA. Her husband, like, you know, and she tells him, I don't even know if she says too much but about the dream, but you know that Heather Langenkamp, the actress, is getting scary phone calls from a stalker.
Yeah, so her husband's not really taking the whole dreams that she's having, like, seriously. He's more concentrating on the phone calls.
Yes, she's been getting, like, a stalker's phone calls who's saying, like, 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you, which a lot of these horror actresses have had stalkers.
I'm sure.
And people that pretend to be the villains in their movies. I mean, 13 Fanboy and what Deborah Voorhees said, That's from a lot of...
Adrienne King from the original Nightmare on Elm Street has gone on record many times talking about her stalker.
Yeah, and a lot of these people have stalkers like that. I think Heather Lane Kemp actually did have a stalker. I'm not 100% sure.
I don't know anything
about
that.
But who knows if they were pretending to be Freddy. But anyway, so she has this son, and then her husband goes off. He's got a job off
in Palm Springs.
Yes, and she, Heather Lane Kemp, is going on, like, going
a talk show.
On a talk show, and they're talking about it's the 10th anniversary.
Before the limo comes to pick her up, her nanny comes. And played by
Tracy Middendorf. It's played by Tracy Middendorf. Yes.
Yeah. And so she's like, she goes, that crazy fuck. Or what'd she say? She says
Tracy
something
Middendorf.
Funny.
Oh, yeah. That crazy fuck. And Heather Langenkamp looks at her. But yes, she plays Julie, that's like the nanny of her
Julie!
Son.
Julie!
And so she and the son, right from the beginning, is acting really weird. He keeps putting on the movie Nightmare on Elm Street, even though, like, Nancy...
The TV's not even plugged
in. I just said Nancy. Heather doesn't want her son watching this. So she goes on the talk show, and Robert Englund, they have come out in Freddy makeup. And again, it's very meta because... You see him as Freddy, but then he plays Robert Englund talking.
The host is like, would you ever let Robert Englund watch your son?
I know, dumb question. So dumb. And she's like, I mean, maybe, I get. But then you see Heather Langenkamp, like, talking with Robert Englund out of makeup, and it's just really cool because you're seeing the actors talking like they're the actors in real life, which is how they would talk,
right,
you know?
So she sees on the news that, like, the two guys that she dreamt about in the beginning of the film, I guess...
I think that's a little later.
Oh, you're right,
But you're right. She, well...
Her to call her husband?
Her husband... No. What happens
Let's talk about the husband.
Okay, so she has a meeting at New Line Cinema, and Robert Shea, who plays himself, says he wants to bring Nancy back, and she's like, wait, that's crazy.
She goes to New Line Cinema, which it's no longer in that location, FYI, on Robertson. It's no longer there.
Tim knows everything about
it. I know everything.
They were trying to get her to play Nancy again, and she's like, you know, that's really weird. And then Robert Shea says, well, actually, it's a big surprise, but your husband's working on the glove right now. And then Heather freaks out because she's like, oh my God, that was the dream I had.
Right.
Also, the son, Dylan, has been freaking out, having weird episodes. So she calls her husband,
she's
says,
like,
you got to get back
home.
Here.
Get home.
So in a big, really cool sequence, the husband's driving, and as he's driving, he falls
asleep. Comes up. Through his crotch.
Yes, Freddy's glove comes up through the crotch. And again, you're wondering, is this Freddy? Because this is real life. Like, what is this? But it looks like Freddy, but like a darker version of Freddy.
Yeah, it's like he's wearing a sweater and like also like a jacket.
It's more like, it feels more like supernatural and just darker. Like, it's not cracking jokes. He looks a little different than Freddy has.
Yeah, so then...
Well, he gets basically ripped apart and he's gonna car
crash.
Right,
so then like she gets a knock on the door from two policemen, and they're like, your husband has passed. And she's like, I need to see his body.
Yes. And she goes, and when she sees the body, she sees claw marks on it, and she's like freaking out.
She barfs,
and they show it. And
oh,
it's
and the
amazing.
the morgue guy is fun. He's from Scream. He plays the cameraman,
Kenny the cameraman. Yes, the guy who plays in the morgue, we just notice, is 2 years before Scream, plays Kenny the camera.
Kenny, when I say move your fat ass,
no, when I say hurry. Please interpret that as move your fat tub of lard ass now. Come on, Tim.
I dropped the ball.
There's a lot of craziness that ensues because her son.
Well, first off, I didn't want to see her barf.
I thought the barf was the most effective.
I mean, it was effective, but I didn't want to see it.
If you saw your husband ripped apart, his body ripped apart, you'd probably barf too.
I mean, well, I guess.
Tim, you're like, first, let's talk about me having a husband.
Yeah.
I knew you were going
to
say.
I was like, first, I have to get married.
You're like, can we take this one step at a time?
One step at a time.
Well, okay. So Dylan is having all sorts of like episodes, and Heather's starting to reaches out to John Saxon, who plays himself, and she reaches out to Robert Englund, and she even reaches out to Wes Craven, who plays himself.
I actually thought that scene was really good because they have the conversation and then they cut to the computer and it's the same dialogue they just had.
Well, there's a lot of weirdness going on in the scene because, number one, her conversation with Robert Englund, she kind of says she's been having kind of dreams of like Freddy, and Robert Englund says, oh, you know, like it's dark, it's a darker Freddy, isn't it? And then you see he's painting a portrait of Freddy.
He's like,
so
he goes,
obviously,
I can't meet with you today. It's a dark day.
Apparently he's been dreaming. And then Wes has like a script up on his computer which has the conversation they just had. So it's meta on so many levels that it's almost confusing. But at the same time, really intriguing.
Right. I don't actually think, I guess you just can't look too deep and just enjoy the ride. I don't know.
And Wes says, he has this weird like dialogue with Heather Langenkamp where he says,
you need to play Nancy one last time.
He says the way that he says Freddy has it can break into the real world unless we continue making movies about him. And as a person, I'd be like, you made Freddy up. That's not true.
Yeah.
But as a viewer, you're like, okay, cool. And so he's almost saying like, but this is a more supernatural Freddy and he becomes loose in our world unless we put him in the film world, which is a little weird.
Right. Like, I mean, I get what you're saying, but I can't possibly explain it to you because you just explained it to me.
But then does Michael Myers come in the real world because we stopped making movies about Halloween?
We're not talking about Halloween.
You're like, get off Halloween, you know?
Just get off.
Anyway, just get off. There's this creepy scene with John Saxon where her son Dylan is in the park and he like climbs to the top of this equipment and like,
it's so crazy.
He falls off the top of the equipment and she like runs in slow-mo.
She catches him, which I mean, actually thought it was Heather Langenkamp. Like, I don't know how they filmed that.
I mean, she catches him and he needs help. He's having major like,
you know, fun
episodes.
Fact, Miko Hughes has that piece of playground equipment in his house today.
It's huge, though.
You mean
the backyard, not
his,
like
his
inside.
Backyard.
Okay, I was going to say inside
his
house.
It's in his living room. He lives in a mansion.
It's ripping through the roof. Right. It is there.
It's crazy.
Well, so she takes Miko Hughes to a hospital, and she brings Julie, the nanny, with her. And right away, the doctor thinks that Nancy, I keep saying Nancy, it's Heather.
Heather Langenkamp is abusing her
kid.
Right, and she thinks that Heather has lost her marbles.
She really, what the best part is that also when Heather has another nightmare, and this is a really cool like callback, she wakes up with like a shot of gray in her hair, just like Nancy did. If you remember in the original Nightmare on Elm Street, after like not sleeping and having horrible nightmares, she turns her own hair gray, and now Heather's
scenes in the hospital are so cool, but she has to leave. She has to leave the hospital because otherwise, I think they're going to take Heather Langenkamp
well,
to jail.
Well, she promises Dylan that he has a stuffed animal, this Rex, like this dinosaur, and he says it protects him from the bad man, aka Freddy.
So she's
Freddy.
Like, I'm going to go get it.
So she says, Julie, the nanny, stay with him and don't let them put him to sleep.
This is the best scene in the movie.
Great scene,
I think,
great
because
scene.
There's like three nurses that are trying to get a little shot into the little boy, and she's like, don't stick him with that.
Yeah, and she like basically, I love how she threatens that she's going to stick one of the nurses. You could easily be arrested.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, but they end up putting it in him and he falls asleep. And then there is this really gruesome, amazing scene.
Reminiscent of the original Nightmare on Elm Street, which we just spoke about.
Tina death scene.
Yes.
Freddy comes up and murders Julie, the nanny.
The same graphic way.
And where she's being like thrown around the walls, no gravity. But Dylan, the poor little kid, has to watch this.
Yes.
That is traumatic, not just for a young kid actor, but I mean, not just for a young kid character, but even the actor, because that scene is gruesome.
It is so gruesome. Here's the fun fact. I was working at the movie theater when this movie came out in 94, and on my break would be the same time.
You would get little kids and force them to watch that scene.
Yes, I'd be like, kids, come in here. No, I would go in there and eat nachos in the back seat and... Backseat.
Whose car were you in? Freddy Krueger's?
No, I worked in a movie theater. And then, but I would always walk in on that same scene. So I saw it like on the big screen like a good 10 times.
And were you traumatized?
No.
Please, Tim always does an impression. The main doctor in this, because she has like an accent and she
continues. Miss Langenkamp.
She continues to say Heather's full, like she won't call her Heather. She just keeps saying Miss Langenkamp. So Tim, one more time.
Miss Langenkamp.
She's like, the man from your films? Freddy Krueger?
She's like Santa Claus.
It's great because she just, how many times does she say Langenkamp?
I would say at least 10.
And we're not talking, like, Langenkamp's not the easiest last name to say. It's not like Ms. Smith or Ms. Curtis.
Ms. Langenkamp.
So she says it so many times. She must have done vocal exercise before. Yeah, anyway.
Red leather, blue bummy.
Julie is murdered and Dylan, in like a dream state, like walks out of the hospital and walks across the freeway home.
Yeah, Heather for 1994, this scene is really good.
Heather tries to follow him, and like again, it's a little green screeny, but they're literally walking across an LA freeway,
yeah.
And cars are swerving around.
And you know what? I'm sure this movie, I think it had an $8 million budget. It's pretty impressive.
It was pretty impressive because then there's like weird things where like Freddy is like lifting Dylan up above the freeway. But she, and I love, Heather gets hit by one of the cars on the freeway and gets up and is totally okay.
Well, yeah,
I love
it. And then she runs to her house and then she runs into John Saxon and like, this is where the movie really takes a turn.
You want to talk about like meta on top of meta. She, apparently Heather is either asleep or because she's in like, anyway, the dream world and the reality world have kind of just combined. And now she looks around and she's on Elm Street in her her Nancy clothes, and John Saxon is calling her Nancy. And it is really cool, and like she sees her house is now the house from A Nightmare on Elm Street. I remember as a fan loving that.
Yeah, that was really cool because all of a sudden the dad, John Saxon,
looks like
the dad. He's wearing like the cop uniform. He's got like the
Mr. Thompson.
He looks like. And she's suddenly in her pajamas.
Yes, and she, I would, if, and she like, she plays along even though she knows it's like not true, but everything is fucked up.
Freddie's coming up through the bed, and then she's got to find these sleeping pills that lead her to her son.
Yes, her son left her. It was like from the Hansel and Gretel breadcrumb analogy, leaving breadcrumbs. He left his sleeping pills. So she goes into like this boiler room hell of a dream world.
With a big puddle, with lots of fighting in this big puddle of water.
Yes, and Freddie is like fighting with her, and he's fighting with Dylan, and they are able to trap him in like a furnace or a
boiler. Yeah. And like his tongue comes out, wraps around her neck. It's very phallic.
It is. And there's so much Nightmare on Elm. Wes Craven loves tongue stuff. Like the first movie, remember, I'm your boyfriend now. Yeah. And he'd like the tongue.
Yeah.
And this one, like he literally, his tongue wraps around her entire head.
And then her son takes a knife and cuts it so it looks like a snake tongue.
Yes, it does. But they trap him in the boiler room and they light it on fire. And you know how Freddy does not like fire. Apparently he continues to get murdered through fire.
Right. So then they jump back into the puddle together and they come out his bed.
It's very weird because it's like, I think because they've, again, this is, I mean, I had a hard enough time.
It's better to watch.
I had a hard enough time interpreting the ending scene of the original. This one is like bonkers, but in a good way. Like they, it's like they've defeated Freddy. So they're back into the real world. And it ends where there's a script there from Wes Craven saying like, thanks for playing Freddy or Nancy one more time.
Thanks for playing Freddy.
You're great as Freddy, Heather. No, but it says, thanks for playing Nancy one more time. Now Freddy is in hell where he belongs. But they look at the last page of the script and it's the dialogue that just is happening now.
Right.
So it's so meta.
So it's like, hey, I wanted you to play Nancy one last time. Hey, look, you just did.
And hey, what you're saying right now is actually written in the script, even though how did I know that?
I remember as like, I went to this movie. I think I was 17, and I went with the popular girls. I don't want to talk about how popular I was.
Were you
popular
girls?
I tried to be, but they all went with me, so I was happy about that.
Okay.
No, we were sitting there, and I was just like, what the F was that?
It is, well, but here's the thing.
I mean, I still loved it.
Even at 14, when I saw it in the movie theater, and I told you, Tim, this story, and it's not like the craziest story, but my best friend and I went, and we got the fucking time wrong.
I know,
so we walked in halfway through the movie, right when she sees her dead husband and barfs. We watched the second half of the movie and then stayed and watched the first half of the next showing. So I saw the second half first and then the first half, which is the dumbest way to watch
it. Did you go buy tickets again or what did you do?
No, we just stayed in the theater because we're like, well, we messed up on time.
When the people came to clean, were they like, get the F out of here?
Oh, we went out of the theater and just hung out and came back in.
Well, did you play video games?
Hey, Tim, if you ask me one more question... I'm going to slice you up. No. I mean, that's not important. What's important is that I actually, even at that age, loved this movie because it was so unique.
No, I did. I loved it too.
Anytime bringing back original stars from a movie, I love. So I love that. I loved that it was dark and scary because the last few sequels weren't and I didn't like them as much. And I just
thought
it was different.
We forgot one sequence that's really good. One sequence is when they go to a funeral for her husband. Oh. You see Tuesday Night, so Don't Blink. And you see the guy, Nick Corey.
Yes, and it's funny. We talked to Tuesday Night because we got the pleasure of interviewing her. She's amazing. And she got to come back and do a quick cameo scene. And fun fact about that, Wes Craven was trying to get various actors from the movies in there. And apparently, he did an interview where he said he had wanted to get Johnny Depp to come back for a cameo, but he was too scared to ask him because Johnny Depp was too big at that time. But
what was he making at that time? Don Juan?
Something. But then he ran into Johnny Depp years later and he mentioned, oh, you know, I wish. And Johnny Depp said, if you had asked me, I 100% would have done a cameo in the movie. Wow. Who knows if he really would have. But,
yeah, I mean, we'll never know.
But it's because in that funeral scene, there's a bunch of actors from the movies. And like, there is a cool scene where Freddy comes up out of the coffin and like is like grabbing Dylan.
It's such a good scene.
Scary. Yeah.
I think it's a great scene.
It is. There's a lot of great scenes, but what I love essentially about this movie, not the earthquakes, no, is that it feels, even though it's very different because it's like the meta actors playing themselves, it has the feel of the original. Dark, scary, nightmarish.
And the score is so good.
It is really good. It has callbacks to the original. I mean, it literally has parts from the original reenacted. It has a death scene like Tina's. Like, it's just so, if you're a fan of the original, you will love this one, right?
Yeah. And you know what? The thing is like, I love this film, but I also love 2, 3, 4, 5.
And how about Freddy's Dead?
and the remake.
You like Pass. The next question.
My two favorites in the series are the original Wes Craven's New Nightmare, and I'm not just saying that because we're reviewing these. I do love a lot of the sequels. I love 3 and 4. I would say if you want to do a great double feature, watch the original and then watch Wes Craven's New Nightmare.
And I loved it.
It is great. And it's just like so cool that it was just everything was perfect about how they made it. They did it on the 10th anniversary. They brought back Nancy. They had all the characters playing themselves as actors, but they still had Freddy. So literally Robert Englund had to play himself, Robert Englund, himself playing Freddy Krueger, and then real Freddy.
Freddy, Freddy, Freddy.
Yeah, like Freddy, 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 Freddy. So
right.
It's a
lot.
The
movie cost $8 million, it made $19 million.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, it didn't do great, but it at least made... I always like when a movie makes its money back.
I think, like you said, maybe it was ahead of its time. Maybe people thought, oh, we're getting just another Freddy sequel. Where are
but
the one-liners?
Not, it's not a money grab.
It isn't, but you know what? It's one of those things that they let Wes Craven like pursue his vision, a vision he had since Part 3, and I think it worked, and I have a feeling, I don't have statistics for this, that it probably like a cult classic. Like I think more people like it now than they did when it first came out.
Absolutely.
You know, I feel like that. But you know, Nightmare.
It's like a fine wine.
Exactly. It takes some time.
Like
but,
me.
Yes, it took you almost 45 years.
Yes, April 19th. Yeah.
But I love. Look, Tim. If you saw your dead husband, you're like, wait. First, let's talk about me. I love that you're like that was the first word.
I was like, I have to have a husband first before I barf.
You can't barf without a husband.
Yeah, I mean, if you're barfing without a husband, what are you doing with your life?
Exactly. You have to have a husband to barf.
That's right.
You know, so I guess all in all, both of these movies are incredible. I mean, nothing beats the original. Nothing beats the
original.
Well,
speak for yourself.
Like, and I just think that, like, even if you've seen these a million times, they're worth
watch it again.
Yes, they're worth revisiting. Also, like Tim said, there's a ton of screenings of the original on the big screen. So if you've only seen it like on VHS. It's a different thing.
Every single year they show it somewhere.
We saw it at the cemetery, the Hollywood cemetery.
I've seen it on the cemetery. I've seen it at, oh gosh, New Beverly. I've seen it at the Fairfax Arrow.
You replay it in your mind.
I play it in my mind when I'm driving.
When I'm driving. You're going to say when I'm drunk.
When I'm drunk, when I'm driving, everything.
It is just amazing. And I guess just as like a last thing again, definitely want to thank our patrons. Without you and your support, we couldn't do this. And to all the people who are listening to this, that, you know, this is the kind of stuff we do in our patron episodes. Every month, it'll be something completely new. And we go back in time and revisit
a
lot
DeLorean.
Of stuff. We use the DeLorean to go back in time. And we just have a lot of fun. Like, I think I have fun with our, like, new horror movie episodes, but these are, like, the fun nostalgic episodes.
Right.
You
like,
know?
I have fun watching movies with Matt. I have fun talking to Matt. And
you're like, but I don't want to have anything to do with you other
right,
than that.
Right, otherwise I hate you.
Exactly. That's a good time today.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thank you, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this. Lots more to come and lots more for patrons. And thank you for everything.
Bye, Freddie.
Okay, bye.